Hey friends, Andy Herman here. Before we get into today's show, I just wanted to take a quick moment to thank all of our sponsors all throughout the year, specifically Habish Habish Rotier, Luigi's Frozen Pizzas, ZBiotics, and Prize Picks. They've all done such an incredible job supporting us here at Packaday. If you have the moment, please make sure to support them as well. One of the best ways that you can support the channel is by supporting our sponsors. Again, a huge thank you to Habish Habish Rotier, ZBiotics, Prize Picks, and of course, Luigi's Frozen Pizzas. Thanks for your time. Now on to today's show.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Packaday Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Packaday Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. To say that I am excited for today's show is a vast understatement. I get to be joined once again by Perry Goldstein. Packs what she said, of course. Perry underscore Goldstein on social media, both Twitter and Blue Sky. And then, of course, we've got Wisco Grant, Grant Bills. You can find him at Wisco Grant and on the Wisco Sports Show. My friends are back. We get to talk Packers today. We're going to be going over fact or fiction. I've got some really fun ones for you guys that you have not been able to prepare for at all. I'm going to throw some crazy stuff at you and just see how you react. But Perry, Grant, before we get into that, how the heck are things going?
Great. Super excited about this. And, you know, we love surprises here on the Packaday Podcast.
I'm giving you no lifelines. I'm just throwing stuff at you just to see how you respond. It's going to be amazing. And I cannot wait. Grant, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Went to see my parents this weekend. They live on a lake. So we're like, great, we can do lake stuff. And then it was like 62 and cloudy the entire weekend. So that was nice, but nice to see my dad, and a happy Father's Day belated to you as well, Andy. So
thank you.
I'm good. And I like that these prompts are a surprise, because then if I can't come up with an interesting answer, it's not because I didn't put the thought and the effort into it. It's just because your prompt was so good that it paralyzed me and I couldn't come up with anything.
It's my fault for sure. So yeah,
that's the gift we give Andy on Father's Day. Blame.
Yeah,
I love it. I give me all the blame that you want. No, I am really excited about this, because I think there's some really interesting, just thought-provoking conversations surrounding the Packers right now. And I'm really interested just to kind of pick your brain on all of these different topics. I have 12 potentials. I don't know if we're going to get all to all of them. Just kind of depends on how things go. So we're going to start right away. I was going to start with one in particular, but I'm going to hold on it right now. So I'm going to just start with an interesting sort of conversation starter. So I'm going to go with this one. Fact or fiction? And Perry, I'm going to start with you. LVN is the Packers' biggest 2025 X factor.
Oh dear. That's an interesting one, because I see your thought process in it. Like, if he has the breakout we've been waiting for and there's some like crazy pass rush, then that's a huge game changer. If you compare it to anybody else who needs like a big time jump, is that jump as big as LVN's? But if he stays who he is, now I'm just talking out loud.
That's honestly like the fun part of this.
But if he stays how he is now, like, what does that do for this team? And I'd say like,
it's a disappointment.
It's not a ton. Like, it doesn't really do anything for this team other than he's like, I don't want to call him just a body, because he's a little bit more than a body, but he's kind
just
of
a rotational guy.
Like,
just a rotational body. Guy.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I don't know if the biggest, but he is a big X factor, given that how he performs has a pretty drastic like spectrum of outcomes for the team.
I totally agree. Grant, how are you feeling about it?
I think that could be a great fact. I also think that, you know, the easy cop-out answer or follow-up to most of these types of questions is Jordan Love, just because Correct. He's the quarterback. Because I'm someone who doesn't think that Jordan Love has completely solidified himself as a high-end guy. He's solidified himself as a top half of the league guy, but I don't know that the rest of this team is good enough to win with just that guy. So you could probably take a lot of these Packers topics and hypotheticals and say, well, actually, no, Jordan Love is more important, but that's boring and that's stupid. And you could say that about most quarterbacks on most teams. So I think Lucas Van Ness, yes. Not just because the pass rush needs it, but also because like what's the word? The way we're going to judge that draft pick and that selection in a top 15 pick, like at some point, you know, if he doesn't even become something better than an average rotational player, we're going to look back at that pick and not a bust, because to me, busts like are out of the league very quickly. But Packers fans are going to look back at that pick and judge it really, really harshly. So that's another thing that's on the line, is the way that we talk about him and that pick too.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with both of you again. I think, Grant, you bring up a great point of like, if we're being totally sincere about it, Jordan Love is probably the biggest X factor, just because, again, quarterbacks are or whatever. But take that aside, which I think is a fair thing to put to the side. I do think LVN is probably the answer to the question. I'm going to go fact on this one. I do think the range of outcomes is really important. I think not having like a top eight pass rush, a top like somewhere in that range, is just like a non-starter. If you really want to get to the level that you want to get to as like a top team, it's really difficult to compete at the highest levels if you don't have a legitimately really good pass rush. And one of the biggest ways to get there for Green Bay is if one of these players takes a step. Now, could it be Devontae Wyatt? Sure. Could Gary and Clark just find the fountain of youth a little bit for Clark? And again, just Gary maybe post ACL and it comes across that way? Sure. Could each of these guys just take a smaller step forward collectively and all of it together equals a lot better performance? Sure. I think all of those things are in the realm of possibility. But if somebody like an LVN, who again, you spent a top 15 pick on, legitimately becomes a stud and is, you know, in that, you know, I'm not saying like upper echelon of defensive ends, but like a really good starting defensive end, that's going to change this defensive front and just this defense and this team in a pretty significant way. So I'm going to say fact. I do think he is, again, maybe outside of Jordan Love, the biggest X factor on this team.
What did you make of his comments about his hand? He said something like, I got a little bit of a mental block. I've never broken a hand. I've never played professional football, so I'm judging obviously as an outsider, but I don't know that I love that. It's like, man, it's not like you cracked your hip. It's not like you broke your neck, you know, like saying, but that.
Aren't your hands so important for pass rush? Like I do see like trying to protect yourself can hold you back.
Justice went back and watched the tape after he said that. We talked about this past week and he's like, yeah, I rewatched it. We've been talking about how it didn't look like he knew how to use his hands. And we find out, well, he's got a broken, thumb or whatever, broken finger on one of his hands. It's like, well, okay, that probably had a lot to do with it, or at least something to do with it. I don't think we're going to know, quite frankly, exactly if that was something legitimate until we see him play this year. And if all of a sudden we're seeing him use his hands really well, it's like, okay, like we now know why it didn't look, you know, good in 2024 and why it's probably looking better in 2025. I think anything that we can kind of take away as a potential positive of like, oh, that's why maybe it didn't look as good as it could have been, I'm all for. I'm willing to bake in excuses at this point and hopeful that maybe there is something that can help him break out in this upcoming season. But I do think it's noteworthy, just like Kenny Clark's foot injury was noteworthy. And anytime you find out something like that, I do think it matters. And it probably just, again, makes it playing in the NFL is a insane task to ask anyone when they're at 100% health. Like it is such a hard task just to go out there and perform at a good enough level in peak situations. And if you're now like literally almost like a hand tied behind your back, you can only imagine how difficult that's going to be. So I do think there is potentially some legitimacy to it.
The physical part of it to me, I never doubt the legitimacy of that. It was more the comments about like, well, he said something along the lines of, I lost my confidence or I had a real mental block. And that's where I say like, if you like the injury that Aiden Hutchinson had, for example, like there has to be insane psychological hurdles to coming out the other side of something that traumatic. And I'm not saying a broken hand isn't traumatic, but if I'm asking a guy to be a badass game wrecking guy in the trenches, I'm going to sound like such a hater. I just don't love the idea of a broken finger, like mentally roadblocking you for a large portion of the season. So I'm excited to see, everyone says this offseason, his confidence is through the roof, and that would be a great step.
I feel like not feeling 100% of yourself and like not being able to give 100% of your effort is like a mental block in itself. Sure. I've never broken a bone either, but I've seen like friends, like even just who like are so debilitated by a broken foot or like something that affects their day to day that it like totally deteriorates their mental health, because you can't do all the things that you are used to doing and know you can do. So then as a NFL player whose like whole being is this like powerful athletic person, and then trying to play around that, right? So like nobody knows, even outside of the team, like fans, you're probably getting all this like, why hasn't he made a jump? Why doesn't he? I don't know if he pays attention, right, to social media, but I can see that impacting you. I know that we're getting totally off topic, but both these things, like, I don't know. I won't ask it. It's a question for both of you, but has made me like kind of view the team a little bit differently in hindsight. Just knowing how hobbled they were. Like, I think we thought about this team as like, okay, well, Jordan wasn't 100% all season. Like, okay, we can talk about that. But now you have Kenny and LVN and you didn't have Jair. And you're like, damn, was this team like hurt a lot more than we thought? And that clearly impacted them. I don't know. It's making me rethink the whole season.
Kenny, to me, I think he was, just listening to his comments, like it was something from week one, right, that he was dealing with. Like, I have a lot more faith now, and some of it is hope, but I expect Kenny to be a lot better player this year, and I'm less concerned about him, you know, falling off an age cliff or something like that. So Kenny Clark and the injury there, I definitely buy into that, because we couldn't figure out what was going on with him last year. We just haven't had the proof of concept with Lucas Van Ness yet. Yeah. To say that he would have been this if not for his thumb injury. He's also a lot younger, right? And he was a project draft pick as it was. So last year may have very well been that breakout year, and it didn't get the chance to get there. But the Kenny Clark piece of it specifically is where I'm like, oh, okay, looking back, that starts to make a lot more sense, to your point, Perry.
We are very dedicated to our craft. We're going to get back together in a couple of weeks. All three of us, we'll go and break our thumb on purpose this week and see if we have a mental block in a couple of weeks coming off the broken thumb, just to kind of get in the feel for it and do some real homework and study on this. But now, my guess, I don't know how he broke the thumb. I don't know if it was like actually rushing the passer. So if that was like something that he did, then maybe he was like, oh, maybe I don't want to do it the exact same way again, because I'm going to break something again. More importantly, I just think, when you're a first round pick, top 15 pick, right? There's already a ton of pressure on you to produce. And then again, you're going out there 100% and you're finding it difficult in your first year and a half, whatever it is, to go out there. And then again, you break your hand and you're going out there and you're trying to, again, compete at a level that is just already difficult. That's now more insanely difficult. And probably the number one thing that they're working with him on as he's coming into the league is probably his hand usage and how he's using, you know, his hands for different moves and setups and things like that, his rips, all of it. So now that's, again, even more debilitating because he, again, doesn't have full use of it. So long story short, I can understand how he in some capacity was maybe not feeling just 100% mentally with the entire situation. And then I think obviously physically it played a factor as well. Either way, the good news is it seems like he's playing with more confidence. He's 100% healthy with that hand. And hopefully that creates a huge opportunity for him this upcoming season. And clearly is one of the reasons why all three of us stated as a fact that LVN is one of the biggest X factors this upcoming season. You see how it pulled that all around. That's a Wisco Grant, you know, pull back together from the radio style. So I'm learning, Grant, from your very epic ways.
Great. Yeah. That's what the world needs more of, people who think about these things through the lens of radio segments. And to your point about the health, Perry, like, I think there are two or three or four examples of players where we can nitpick and go back. But the weird part about last year's team is, other than those guys, they were really healthy. You know what I mean? Compared to some of these other teams who lost big pieces, or like the Lions were floored. So it's weird because on their face, they were really, really healthy. But then you could take three or four players who are really significant to their efforts in the pass rush, two bodies there, and the quarterback, obviously, those are huge cogs who didn't really miss many games. But you question maybe, you know, that final 15 or 20% they could have gotten from those guys last year, maybe that would have made a difference, especially in those close games, the one in Detroit, or, you know, the maybe the Brazil game against the Eagles, for example, games like that.
And it's just one of those things too, right? Like, LVN and Jordan and Kenny might be fully healthy this year, and you know, those sort of guys. And now Xavier McKinney's got a quad, and, you know, Josh Jacobs has a calf, and like, it's just like other people now have other stuff that is factoring in. Like, oh, they weren't, again, this stuff is, I just think, kind of cyclical with all of it. But I'm very happy that two guys on the defensive front that didn't perform quite the way that we were expecting a season ago may have reasons as to why that was the case. I'd have two lightning round follow-ups that I had on this that are in the same realm of conversation here. So first one, fact or fiction, DeMarcus Covington will be able to revitalize the Packers defensive front. Grant, I'll let you go first.
Here's what's weird to me, is we can't say that last year the pass rush was limited because Kenny Clark was hurt and Lucas Van Ness was hurt. but also we think the scheme was to blame. Like, I watch a lot of House. I was watching House right before I came in here to record this with you guys. And they're always like arguing about like symptoms that are, you know, indicative of one thing, but then not indicative of another, or like we need a theory of a disease that like encompasses all the symptoms, we can't ignore. So like we're looking at the pass rush, and it's clear that a lot of folks believe that Kenny Clark and Lucas Van Ness were slowed by injuries, but like then also it was the scheme, and it was very clearly said to be the scheme in the postseason press conferences. But then like now Jeff Hafley and Matt LaFleur might be saying like, well, we wanted to rush four and, you know, play behind that, but now, you know, after last year, maybe we'll try. So I don't really know what to think anymore. I think DeMarcus Covington will revitalize this pass rush because I think that group will progress naturally, even if he doesn't really do anything. I don't know if he'll do anything, but I think that group will get better. I just don't know for a fact if it will be because of him. You know what I mean? I don't even know if I answered your question. I don't think I did. I think this is against the spirit of the whole thing that we're doing.
That's fair enough. Perry, how do you feel?
I don't know enough, honestly, about DeMarcus Covington and his ways to say that he specifically is going to be the guy under Jeff Hafley. I do think that year two in a scheme inherently like warrants a jump from the guys, especially when they performed so well in year one. Like you're another year in and you're more comfortable with what you're doing. I don't know if it's going to be him specifically. There's another coach that I'm actually like more thinking more about in terms of like who's going to impact, and that's the new linebacker coach. But because I feel like it was very clear, unless Edrin Cooper is just like him and any coach is going to be good with him. But I think to this question, to me, it's more just like a year two and Jeff Hafley that's going to do the thing.
I think it's an unfair question, to be fair. And I think your point is spot on, Perry. I always joke like we don't have all 22 of assistant coaches, right? Like we can't be like, oh, look what DeMarcus Covington's doing in practice. Like, oh my God, this is amazing, right? We don't know exactly what Jason Rebrovich was doing over the last couple of seasons. So to say that somebody's going to come in and do something different that's going to revitalize this defensive line is hopeful, and I think there's excitement around it, but I think it's a very difficult question to answer just because there's no way of us really knowing what he would potentially do to make it different, because again, we don't have any examples of that, right? I will just say this. I know that there are seemingly some that did not think Jason Rebrovich was a very good defensive line coach. Clearly Green Bay felt the same. They fired him, and now they brought in somebody that was a defensive coordinator in New England and that like learned from Bill Belichick, who is maybe the smartest defensive coach in the history of football. So I think there's got to be some positive there. How much that is remains to be seen, but I am excited about it. So I think we'll punt on the fact or fiction on it, but I think it was a good conversation nonetheless. All right, then my last follow-up here, and again, same sort of realm, fact or fiction, Perry, you're up first this time. A single Packers defender, one of them, can be any of them, pick your poison, a single Packers defender will finish with 10 plus sacks in 2025. Fact or fiction? We'll be right back.
I feel like if anyone was going to do it, it'd be like a Rashawn Gary sneaky 10 sack season that doesn't even feel that impactful. That's so bad that I'm saying that out loud. But I can't right now in good faith like put that on any other player, because no one else has ever, like, if Kenny really has a bounce back and he was just like super hurt last season, but has Kenny maybe one or you tell me how many times Kenny Clark has had plus 10 sacks.
Yeah. First of all, Rashawn Gary has never had 10 plus sacks in his career. Kenny has, the highest that Kenny's ever got was 2023 with 7.5.
Yeah. So the thing for me, and maybe I'm in the minority of this, I want to see them affect the pocket and affect like the offense. Do sacks do that? Obviously. But like, I don't care if they collapse a pocket and the ball gets thrown out of bounds every single time. I just care that the pass rush is getting somewhere and that the offense can't move the ball. So if each of them, Right. Like if each of them come out of this season, every single one on this defensive line with 5-6 sacks, great. But like, to me, I just care that they're getting there somehow.
Grant?
Fiction. It's not really a diss to anyone. I would have said fiction before you gave me those stats. I knew that Rashawn Gary, what was he, topped at 9.5? And I knew that he had never had double digit. I didn't know about Kenny Clark, but it's not a surprise that his best season, because he's a more of a do-it-all guy. He's more of a playmaking nose tackle than a pure pass rusher. It's not even, I don't even say fiction because I don't like their defensive line. I just think they have a lot of guys, not unlike their wide receiving core, who can do it. So, like, I think Devontae Wyatt will have a handful, and I think Kenny Clark will have a handful, and I think all these guys will have a handful. But I have a really hard time seeing, you know, look, if Rashawn Gary has 10, I guess I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't fall over my chair, but I'll say fiction, and I think that's much more likely that a bunch of different guys pitch in sacks here and there, and it's more of a pass rush by committee.
Colin Oliver, 12 sacks, book it. Now I'm going fiction as well. I think this defensive line will be improved, but I'm going to also stick with fiction on this one. Grant, you brought up in the first one of how maybe the biggest X factor is actually Jordan Love. And again, I think that's a fair assessment to make. Jordan Love is currently 8th in the betting markets for MVP odds. So my factor fiction follow-up is factor fiction. Jordan Love will finish top 6 in MVP voting. He is currently 8th in the betting markets. So factor fiction, top 6 for Jordan Love. I think Perry up first this time, or Grant? Either one. Grant, all right, Grant, you're up first this time.
Thanks, Perry. I'll get right on this one. Another way to frame this, or a way that I would frame this, would be like he's in the MVP discussion past Thanksgiving, you know, sure, or something like that. Like he's just a relevant piece of fodder in that talk. If I had to bet.
I would hang the banner now. Jordan Love, relevant piece of fodder, Thanksgiving 2025.
Yeah. He's in the conversation is what we would say.
Yeah.
Probably.
He's in like legitimate like third, fourth place. I mean, if you finish 6th, like you're like getting legitimate like third, fourth, fifth place votes for MVP, right? So again, he's in, if not the converse, like the legit conversation, he's like in the conversation a Jace.
I love that. I'll say fiction. And it's not even because I think Jordan Love's going to have a great bounce back year after being banged up and kind of going through some growing pains last year. I just think there's a lot of good quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think there's a couple in his own conference. Like people, if the Eagles have a good statistical regular season year, people are not just going to turn a blind eye to Jalen Hurts. Like there's going to be plenty of voices who are like, guys, we need to take him more seriously as a quarterback and not just a leader of a talented team. Jaden Daniels is in there. And then we know how loaded the AFC is. So I'll say fiction, but that's not really even a Jordan Love thing. The NFL has a lot of really, really good quarterbacks, and Jordan Love is yet to prove that he's in that group for an extended period of time, at least.
Fair enough. Perry?
I mean, I think about this, like there's a very clear top, right? There's a top 3 that I don't think anyone debates: Mahomes, Allen, Lamar, right? So that's like saying, like, you put those 3 aside, they're probably always going to be in the MVP conversation. There's 3 slots left. Is Jordan Love in that conversation?
Great way of looking at it.
And that's hard. I think that's really hard. Especially, like, I know people don't want to hear this, but, like, Dak is coming back. If Dak has a really good season, I feel like he's always in that conversation. Like, people love Justin Herbert, even though, like, no matter what happens with the Chargers, like, they love Justin Herbert. And I'm not saying Jordan Love can't be there, but I think to Grant's point, there's just a lot of competition.
Joe Burrow, CJ Stroud, Jaden.
Yeah, Daniel. Exactly. I mean, Burrow had an amazing season last year. No one talked about it. Like no one talked about it. And everyone's super high on Jaden Daniels. So as they should be. So I'm just thinking like he's in competition essentially for 3 slots, which makes it me feel like fiction. And I feel the same as Grant is like, I don't think if he was there after having an amazing season, I'd be like, that doesn't surprise me at all. But I think that's a really high bar to set for him. If you ask me if I think he's going to end the season as statistically in the top 10, that I would say fact. I think that's like very plausible. But for an MVP conversation, I just don't know if he's there yet.
Yeah, players that are currently ahead. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, Jaden Daniels, Jalen Hurts, Justin Herbert, and then you get a bunch of guys tied. Actually, it looks some books have CJ Stroud a little bit ahead of Jordan as well. And then again, you get a group of quarterbacks that are pretty equal. So, I totally get it. I'm still going fact on this one. Jordan Love's going to finish top six in MVP voting. Argue with whoever you want to argue with. I'm going for it. I'm just going to say this. I think the Packers offense is going to have a really big season this year. I think they're going to bounce back, even though I don't think they had like a bad year offensively. I think they're going to bounce back in a pretty significant way. I think the depth at wide receiver is going to make a difference. I think Tucker Kraft's going to have a much better, or not a much better year, like he had a bad year. I think he's going to get even better this upcoming year. I think the offensive line depth and just some of the players that they got replacing Josh Myers, I think is going to be huge. I think they're going to know how to use Josh Jacobs even better this upcoming year. I think all of it in totality is going to make for a really fun offense. And I think Jordan Love is going to be what stirs all of that. I think he's at like sixth. I don't think he's going to necessarily be quite in that top five, but I'm going to say he does finish in the top six. And I'm going to say he finishes sixth in MVP voting, right at that. So I'm going to take it a step further.
You heard it here first, folks.
All right, let's stay on the Jordan Love train. I think this is a fun one as well. This is the one I mentioned to you guys ahead of time that maybe this would have been beneficial to research ahead of time to maybe have some statistics on and whatnot. I actually plan on doing this at some point. I've not done it yet. I have a topic potentially planned out that I want to dig into this further, but this can maybe be our introduction to it. Fact or fiction, Jordan Love is too much of a gunslinger. I think Perry's up first this time.
I feel like you asked this question because you have a very specific answer.
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. So which can is I, go with I, my I haven't had a chance to research it yet either. So okay. I want to talk about this at some point, but this is one of the ones that like I can't just turn on a camera and talk about, right? Which is what we're doing right now. I get, but like you really want to have the ability to kind of research and to be like, all right, what are the numbers actually say? I'll give you mine. I'll give you guys time to think about this.
Can I tell you what my gut says?
Yes. Yep.
Like, My gut says no. And I say that because I think we very much like hyper focus on each player's like individual flaw sometimes. And this is a flaw. Like he does put the ball in harm's way more than you would like him to. But we've also seen him have the like ability to reel it back. I think it affects his game negatively, but he does have the ability to not put the ball in harm's way. Like if you look at the two halves of the season, they look very different in terms of interceptions. So when I think of a gunslinger, I think of like, you know, someone who actually just doesn't care and that's like part of their game and they just say F it and right.
Yep. Jay Cutler-esque.
Right. Like, I mean, Favre was just like so amazing that it didn't matter.
So Favre might be the only gunslinger that's ever actually been able to pull it off to a real extent. Josh Allen maybe has some level of it at times.
But Josh has reined it in. Like,
And he hasn't won a Super Bowl yet. Brett actually did. So, yeah.
Stafford gunslings a little bit. Yes.
Maybe
he swashbuckles. I don't know if he gunslings. There's a line in there somewhere to be. Right. I don't know.
He's worse today.
I
don't know what I like better, the fact that you brought up house or that you brought up swashbuckling. I'm in love with both, to be honest.
My answer is fiction, Andy. My gut says fiction, just because I think we like hyper focus on those like few plays, but if you looked at him across the season, I actually don't know it would be that high of a percentage, and also because we've actively seen him reel it back. Like we can debate whether or not we think it's a good like. What level of reel back we want from him, because I think when he reins it in too much, it actually hinders his ability to push the ball down the field. But I don't think it's like too much.
Okay. Grant.
My initial instinct was to say fiction too. I'm thinking about how just me personally, I don't know about anyone else. I think I would view his season as it relates to interceptions, at least last year, very differently. If you just took out the pick six against the Rams out of his own end zone and the pick six against the Lions, like just those two throws. And you can't do that, right? Because he made those throws and that was a part of his season. But I would like to think that as he gets older, he has the sense to avoid those throws. If you want to try to thread one in push it down the field on third and 10 against the Vikings at home. Like, you can live a little bit with that. Because then some of his most biggest, his most consequential throws of the season, that deep ball to Jaden Reed was really daring. That throw to Tucker Kraft where he just pulled a seed right and he just plucked it out of the air. So some of his biggest, not only his biggest highlights, but important plays that won them close games were because of throws like that. So I think I would very comfortably say fiction, and I would be just fine with his personality as a quarterback, his decision-making. But those two throws are like, if that's a thing, and that's always going to be a thing, like those are really, really bad. That's not Favre or Stafford or somebody saying I can fit that ball in there. Like that's just turning off your decision-making for a second. And that's a bridge too far.
I am very much in lockstep with both of you, and I'm going to go fiction. And Perry, we're almost identical in our thought process. To me, it is not a gunslinger problem. It is a, we have to find the sweet spot problem. And I think you labeled it appropriately of like, he reeled it in, but at times the reeling in felt like it wasn't the best use of his arm and talent and playmaking ability as well. So I think we did see it second half of 2023, but I thought last year there were like the two dynamics of Jordan, one where he was too loose with the ball and one where he was too tight. And you just have to find that sweet spot. And it's just like, there are times where you need to put the Superman cape on, and to Grant's point, like that's fine. Like there are going to be times where you have to do that. Like I'm cool with playing it safe up until the times where it is time to like, hey, there might be some casualties, but I got to put the Superman cape on and make some things happen because aliens are invading and the laser vision's coming out. So I'm cool with that. I just think you have to find the right time and place. And it didn't quite ever feel like he got into that sweet spot this past year. So I'm not saying it's a gunslinger thing. I'm just saying it's a, how do you focus it at the right moment for the right reasons at the right time?
Do we think that this, to Grant's point, because I think Grant brings up a really good point, is like he's just a 2-year starter and he's still learning these decision-making things. So. Like it doesn't feel to me like inherent to his game. It feels like we can coach this out of you.
I totally agree. I think that's why I'm very bullish on year three. Knock on wood, no injuries that are going to inhibit. Like also like just being able to practice more often, I think is going to help him a ton, get into the rhythm with the offense and the receivers. And then I just think the experience, I think there's nothing like live reps and getting the experience in games. And I think him now having two seasons under his belt as a full-time starter is going to lend him very well to a much better 2025. And again, it's not even saying it was bad 2024, but an even better 2025, excuse me. All right, let's stick with offense. It doesn't matter anymore. Jaden Reed will lead the Packers in receiving targets, fact or fiction?
I think fiction. And I think it'll be very close. Like, I think the top three receivers, my guess at this moment in time, will all be kind of similar. I think it'll be Dobbs. But I think it'll be, like, again, it'll be somewhat comparable. My theory on Dobbs this season is that if he stays healthy and everything stays copacetic, like, I think he's the third down, fourth down red zone guy. Like, I think he's the first of this group who's going to emerge with a little bit of a connection and a little bit of off-script thing with Jordan Love. I don't think he's going to have mountains more receptions than Reed. And I don't think he's going to run away in a yards like perspective either. But I think it'll be Dobbs. I think Dobbs has sneaky become a little underrated this offseason. So I will say fiction.
Okay, Perry.
I see the argument. I do feel like Dobbs has become a little bit of Jordan's like security blanket in the receiving game. So I see that, but I'm going to go fact just to like shake things up. I feel like pretty neutral about this, quite frankly, but I definitely see a world where, I don't know, maybe I'm taking it too much about the offseason stuff that has happened, like the talks about feeling, you know, pushed out or whatever. I don't know. But I do find that there's kind of two ways these things go. And I like to think that Jaden Reed will go the one way, which is like, I felt a little slighted, whatever my feelings were. I'm going to come in and I'm going to work. And we've seen him be an incredible receiver. I mean, his rookie season, he almost had 1,000 yards receiving.
He was fantastic. And he was fantastic at the beginning of last year too.
Yeah. So I think he has every like piece is set for him to be that guy. If he has the relationship with Love, I totally see it. if at the end of the season, Andy, we're listing out stats and that's what comes out of it, then I believe it. I do think also, maybe this is a hot take, I don't know, but I do think they're going to get away a little bit from this, like, spread the ball around, share the wealth kind of offense, because it didn't work that great for them last season. And I think the guys who are producing are going to be the guys that get targeted now. Him, Tucker Kraft, Dobbs, hopefully Matthew Golden. Like, I think they're going to start to really, like, push it to the guys who can catch the ball. So I hope it's Jaden Reed.
And that's, by the way, that's evidence with them taking two wide receivers in the first 2 days. You know what I mean? Like, if they were in a place where we're bringing Wicks and everyone along slowly, like, they wouldn't have done that. So I think that die has kind of been cast even before a game's even been played. So I agree.
I'm gonna cop out of this one a little bit and kind of go right in the middle of both of you. I know you're gonna love it. You're gonna love this. I'm gonna say fiction. There's no one wide receiver that you could give me here that I would be like fact. If you asked me which wide receiver I think right now will lead the team in targets, I would say Jaden Reed. I think he's gonna. That'd be the one that I would predict. But if you're giving me any receiver or the field, I'm gonna take the field just because I think there's so many different options that this could be to lead the Packers in targets, including guys like Tucker Kraft. Like, there's just so many options, right? So I'm gonna go with the field, but if you were to ask me which one I think would be at the top of my list, it would be Jaden Reed. So I'm going fiction with the caveat on that. All right. I know you'd love that one.
Yep.
Let's go defense. The Packers cornerback room will be their downfall. Fact or fiction?
Ooh, I think this is me, isn't it? Their downfall is a little dramatic.
It's a beautiful way to put it.
Something's got to be the downfall if they don't win the championship.
If they don't win the Super Bowl, something has to be the downfall. Will it be the Packers cornerback?
I love how we both thought the same thing there as a retort to Perry.
Guys are dramatic. I think it's your job to be dramatic though, so it's fine. I think I have two thoughts that come to mind off the top of my head, which is basically how the show is going because we have no time to prepare. My one is they weren't their downfall last season, and the room is basically the same plus. So I don't know why that would be the case this season unless something crazy happens. And two, let's say Hobbs is like, let's say he's like hard average. Like, they brought him in. He is just average. Does that hurt, help, or do nothing for this room? And I don't think it hurts this room because Jair didn't play last year. So we're literally going off a year where like we didn't have Jair already. And I thought the cornerback room, at times they let themselves get slashed a little bit, but in the overall, I don't think they were the reason they lost games. And at best, Hobbs is going to be an addition. So I don't really quite see a scenario where this is a fact.
Okay. Grant?
I will say fiction as well. And to immediately piggyback off of how Perry kind of wrapped up, I don't think if this team doesn't win the Super Bowl, I don't think their downfall will be obvious and dramatic. Like, I don't think we're going to be – like, it's not going to be – even if their cornerback room isn't great, it's not going to be 2016 where it's like they have no one. You know what I mean? Unless, of course, like if there's an entire group that's decimated by injury, okay.
Well, the Packers did just re-sign LaDarius Gunter. I don't know if you saw
that could, like, if their entire quarterback room gets hurt, like, sure. But I think as the roster stands now, fiction, no, I don't think the corner will be their downfall. I think the downfall will be the pass rush, and it will be a downfall of not being enough, right? Like, if you watch the cornerback, again, you reference 2016, it's so obvious and it's clear on the screen. Like, they're just not good enough. They don't have the bodies. I think their downfall this year would be the pass rush again, and it's not going to look super dramatic. It's just not going to be quite good enough. So I will say fiction on the cornerback room because I, for the most part, thought they were fine last year, and they lost no one essentially by losing Jair, and they signed Nate Hobbs, who I think most fans are underrating at this point in the offseason. So I will say fiction.
Really quick aside, because I threw LaDarius Gunter under the bus. I'm one of the rare people that I think actually really liked LaDarius Gunter and don't think it's his fault that he was corner one when he should have been corner five. Like if he's corner five as an undrafted free agent, that's a really cool story. And it would have been a really fun success story. And instead they put him as corner one and he should have never been put in that. Yes. Oh yeah. That's not his fault. That is not his fault that he was put in that position. I think if he's corner 4 or 5, you're like, oh, this is a really fun story. And instead it was not because they they taxed him to say the least. I digress. I'm going big fat fiction on this one as well. I could see a world in which they have corner injuries. Where if like Hobbs has had injury issues the past few seasons, but if you have Hobbs and whatever, but we could again say that about any position where if they have injuries, it could potentially be the downfall. I'm not concerned about it at the moment. I do think there is some a little bit depth concerns here that there aren't at other positions on the team. I feel good about depth almost everywhere else. I don't feel great about it at the moment at corner. But I'm going to say fiction on this one as well. I think people are overestimating the downfall of this corner room. And I think they are actually in a much better place than they were a season ago because I like Nate Hobbs a whole heck of a lot better than I liked Eric Stokes this past year. And I actually think that that's going to be a pretty significant upgrade. All right, sticking on the defensive side is a fun one. Jeff Hafley will be a head coach in 2026. Fact or fiction? Grant, you are up first. We'll be right back.
I mean, I would bet fiction. Like if I was betting money, like that would just be probably the more reasonable bet. I was very surprised when he got an interview with the Jets last offseason. And I know Packers fans and owners like myself, like we want to hype up our guys and cheer for our guys. It's like, yeah, Hafley, he more than deserves it. Like, and I'm like, good for him. Take the interviews when you can get them and make those connections and network and get the interview practice and all that stuff. But he was a defensive coordinator for 1 year and the defense was pretty good. Like, I don't know if I don't
top
know that
10,
I was doing man.
Top 10.
Yeah. They were pretty good. But I don't know if it's like, can you believe the job Jeff Hafley did? Oh my God. Of course.
Classic he's getting Packers it. Fan top 10. They're pretty good.
So I would say fiction. Although I think the fact that he's been a head coach at college and he's well-versed, he's great at the podium and seems to connect with people really well. I'm not completely counting it out, but like if you're asking me if I would or wouldn't bet on it, I would say fiction just because that's probably where the odds would benefit me. That's a cop-out answer.
I do want to make one clarification. I said Jeff Hafley will be a head coach in 2026. Just for clarity's sake, he will be an NFL head coach in 2026. I assumed that's the direction we were going in. I don't think he's going to go back to college anyway, but just to clarify, he will be an NFL head coach in 2026. Perry?
If the Packers win the championship in this season.
So it's a fact.
I can see it. Yeah. I can 100% see it. If the Packers lose in heartbreaking fashion, as they historically have for us in any level of the playoffs, I can see him being a guy who's like, we have unfinished business here. I'm not going anywhere. So that's where I land. I think Grant brings up again a great point about he has the experience. So like if I was a different team and they have another successful season on the defense, I could totally see him getting more interview requests. But to him actually getting a job, I don't know. If they win, maybe. Yes.
I'm going to say it's a fact. I think they finish with a top 10 defense again. I think they make a playoff run where they get a winner, a couple wins, and the defense shines in those scenarios. And I will also say, I think any team that ends up passing on him is going to regret it. I think he's going to be a really good head coach in the league. Just watching him coach, watching his presence at the podium, he has it. I really do believe so. I think he's going to be a really, really good coach in this league. And I think teams are going to start to recognize it sooner rather than later. And I could even see it being one of those things where like when the Packers hired Matt LaFleur off of a really unsuccessful offensive coordinator job in Tennessee that year, or when the Packers hired Mike McCarthy off of a really awful offensive coordinator job in San Francisco that year, I think teams are going to get closer and closer of like, not even necessarily needing to have like a top five defense to get that recognition. I think he's going to continue to get interviews. And the more that he gets, I think he's just going to crush one of them to the point where like, we can't pass on that guy. And I think that team that does that is going to be very, very smart. So if it's not 2026, I think it'll be 2027, but I'm going to say it's a fact in 2026. I hope I'm wrong because I would love to see him continue to have that, just defensive coordinator job in Green Bay for the foreseeable future, but I'm going to ultimately say that it's a fact. I have one more serious one, sort of coupling together, and then we've got a couple fun ones just at the end. The people are done with this part one of this conversation, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on this one. So I just kind of want to get your initial gut reaction, and then the more important one is the follow-up to it. So I think, Grant, you're first. The Packers made the right decision with Jaire Alexander, fact or fiction?
Assuming the number that they offered Jaire was reasonable enough, fact. If they offered him like the Jordy Nelson thing, it's like play for free. Like, I do think there was a middle ground to be found, but I'd like to think that the Packers made a good attempt to reach that. And it sounded like Jaire wasn't taking any adjustments. So I'll say fact.
Okay. Harry.
Yeah. I mean, we saw this coming for a while, and it wasn't just like that the Packers like made a tough decision and let go an aging dude. Like, it didn't seem like Jaire wanted to be there anymore either. So for me, when both sides are kind of like having that fizzle out breakup, it's better to just cut it off. I do think they did right by him by just like cutting him outright, and like now he can go sign wherever he wants. I have a hard time with this one because he's just like a personal favorite player. And I think he's a fantastic player. You don't win all pro if you aren't. So it's hard to see like that talent no longer be on the team. That's like kind of where I have a hard time with it, because when he's healthy, he's amazing, but he hasn't been healthy, and you know, no one wants him to play for the team anymore. So
I'm going to say fact in the most succinct way possible. They came to the conclusion that they didn't want to pay him $17.5 million, which I think is the right conclusion. Based off of that, they tried to trade him. They couldn't find a trade. So then they go to the next thing, which is a restructure or a renegotiation. They couldn't come to a conclusion on that. And once you get to, you don't want to pay him $17.5 million, you can't trade him and you can't renegotiate him, the only thing left to do is cut him. I think that's what they did. And again, it's in its most succinct way, I think that was the right conclusion to what was an unfortunate maybe scenario. Why I wanted to ask that is I think the follow-up is more important. Fact or fiction, the Packers have a problem with star Packers and late career contracts. We're seeing it potentially right now to some extent with Elgton Jenkins. We just saw it with Jaire Alexander. We saw it, depending on how you want to view the lens, with Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams, even Preston Smith-ish, Za'Darius Smith, certainly so. We saw that kind of fall apart at the end. Again, there's extenuating circumstances in almost every single one of these that you could go in different directions on. But Aaron Jones is another one that we saw. We are now seeing some level of a trend of some pretty legendary Packers, some pretty star Packers, get to a point where things from a contractual standpoint don't go great. And there's some seemingly angst and frustration between star Packers and the organization. Again, I think there are different threads that weave this together that you maybe have to try to, you know, squint hard enough to get them all in one group. But it is a noticeable trend in some regard. So I'll say it one more time, fact or fiction, the Packers have a problem with star Packers and late career contracts. David Bakhtiari was a lesser one too.
Does every team, like, are we looking at the Packers in a vacuum because we talk about the Packers only? Like, if we looked at this across the league, like, would we see a huge difference with things that have happened with the Packers and things have happened with other teams? Because, like, I just think the late stage contracts are tricky, period. You know, at some point you reach an age, you can't predict it. You want to be ahead of it as a business. But then at that point, that player has been with the team for so long, it's obviously not just a business, it's personal, and it gets muddy, and it's almost never the stars align. And I think we like to think that the stars align, retire with the team is like the standard, when I think it's really an outlier. And it's really hard to watch, certainly. And we can go through everyone you listed, Andy, and talk about that scenario. I bet we have on this show. Sure. I mean, the one that jumps out to me the most is Davante. The Packers offered him exactly what the Raiders offered him money-wise, and he decided to leave. So, like, what do you do about that?
He wanted it a year earlier. They lowballed them theoretically a year earlier, and he was already almost.
Then they came back and said, you know, like, I, you know, like, we can do this all we want. There are many in there that I disagreed with. There are treatment of certain players, like Grant just mentioned Jordy Nelson, that you would hope garner a little bit more respect in their later contract.
Do you know the Jordy Nelson theory, by the way? Do you guys know about this? This was actually a hypothesis that I had before it happened or as it was happening. And then I actually have some clarification that this actually allegedly was the reason they did this. All right. So just a really fun aside. When I was watching that year before, when Jordy was coming off of the ACL injury, and I was watching Devontae and Jordy doing the all 22, right, and grading every player on every play, I was going nuts because Devontae Adams was getting open on almost every play, and Jordy was the primary read from Aaron on almost every play. And I swear to God, every single time that Aaron made Devontae the number one read was like the one play he did not get open. Like every other play, he'd be like wide open, and then like he wouldn't look that way, and then he'd finally look that way, and it'd be like the one play wasn't open. It was the most maddening thing in the world. But I had the theory at the time is that they moved on from Jordy and lowballed Jordy, not because they didn't like Jordy or didn't necessarily want him back, but knew that as long as Jordy was in Green Bay, Aaron would always look that way first and would not look to Devontae first when Devontae was getting open all the time and Jordy just wasn't anymore. And I have had some clarification on this, that the Packers actually did have a belief too, that if they didn't move on from Jordy, the breakout from Devontae and him becoming the star that he is and Aaron getting that connection with Devontae would not have happened because he just always would have looked Jordy's way. At least that was kind of the thinking on it. So I digress, fun aside, that was my theory at the time. And I do think there is actually some truth to it.
Yeah, I mean, also now we know Aaron's pattern like that.
Very much so.
Like, so that was an Aaron Rodgers problem, not a Packers front office.
Fair enough.
No, I mean, my point stands, I think,
yep,
is that like, I think they're really tricky. I like to believe that the Packers do most things in good faith. They're not always going to hit a home run. If anything, most of the times when you get up to the plate, you don't hit a home run. With these kinds of situations. And I would like to look at other, if Grant's sitting here thinking of them, that would be amazing. While I'm talking
to you, what do you want for lunch tomorrow at the moment? I know that
other teams do this too. I mean, we see so many disgruntled guys across the league. Like the one that comes to mind right now, for whatever reason, is Stephon Diggs, and who bounce around because it's their life and it's their money and it's them taking care of their families and their careers end at the greatest you can be in your early 30s. Like, I don't know. I think the two things like are not compatible sometimes.
Okay, Grant.
So I'll piggyback off of the first thing that Perry said, because that was going to be my point too. I think it's just more emblematic of the NFL. And I would wager that on some level, if you follow all these other teams over a period of 5 or 10 years, you're going to see a lot of these other stories, because that's how the NFL works, right? It's so different from the NBA or from Major League Baseball. The NBA just yesterday, I can't even remember his name, which is going to better make my point. Desmond Bane,
yep,
who plays for the Grizzlies, got traded for like 4 or 5 first round picks. And in the NFL, Jair Alexander, who's 28 and is recently, when healthy, the top corner in the NFL, and the whole league is like, nah. Like, no, we won't even give you a seventh, because as soon as you've been injured or you're slightly expensive or you're on the wrong side of 30, no matter how great you've been or how good you are, Bengals are a bad case study, but Trey Hendrickson, like teams, just, they're so much more cutthroat. The NFL is so much more cutthroat and not as much money is guaranteed and injuries. Like the Bucks, like Chris Middleton just hung out for 2 years. He barely ever played, but that's the NBA. That doesn't fly in the NFL for the most part. So I think it's more emblematic of the league. And I think you could look at, maybe this is a Packers green and gold glasses thing, but you can go back and you can look at a lot of these situations. It's like, who am I supposed to fault there? I don't really fault anyone for the Jair situation. I thought that was a good contract. I think it's sneaky underrated. Maybe Brian Gutekunst's best draft pick and one of their best players that they've drafted since Ted Thompson stepped down as a GM. And I think Packers fans have forgotten that. And I agree with Goody. He said it last week. He's like, not really anyone to blame. Got frustrating, but I don't know if there's anyone to blame there. I think they'll settle up and make something work with Elgton Jenkins. So I don't even consider that a problem right now. David Bakhtiari got hurt. You know what I mean? Like this guy got hurt or that guy got hurt. Maybe the Packers could be a bit more personable and roll your eyes because Aaron Rodgers complained about that. Like just sit down with Jordy man to man and be like, hey, look, man, awesome career. MVP 2014 was unbelievable. We're just ready to move on. Like, don't go in there and ask him, like, we'll give you this, you know, if you don't want him to come back. Don't insult him to get him to leave. Just say you don't want him back.
Yeah.
So maybe they could be a bit more personable. that's just total conjecture on my part. I don't know that to be true, but
it's so maybe going back to the host. They just need a little bit better bedside manner is what you're going for. Yeah.
That's a great way of framing it. Like the patient is not going to make it. So let's just be a little bit better in there couple of hours, you know, morbid. Yeah. But I'm with Perry. I think it's more just an NFL thing. And as someone who talks about all the different sports, the differences in contracts and trades and how much value is placed on certain players, even great players in the NFL, like it's just night and day difference. So I don't think that's a Packers thing.
My initial gut reaction was that there's a little bit of smoke to this. Like there's just a little bit something where this is happening quite a bit that I don't even have it. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to define it. Just feels like there's a little bit something. I think both of you have talked me out of it though, successfully. So I'm going to go fiction as well, because you're two both very smart people and you've talked me into going fiction on this one. All right, two fun ones to wrap things up. And again, we can kind of go lightning round on this. Fact or fiction, Zach Tom will sign a contract extension in the calendar year of 2025.
I can go first because Perry, you went first. Unless you want to go.
No, go for it.
I think this is an easy one. I think it's fact. And if they don't, I think they should do it this summer. And if they don't, I'll be a little confused. Because they have the money and you can tinker with left tackle and you can tinker with some of these spots, but this seems like an easy one to me. Just lock it down. I think it'll happen this summer and not just in this calendar year. So I'll say fact.
I mean, that's like saying like by basically the end of this upcoming season. And so that's like December. I mean, I see it happening, like to Grant's point, like I wouldn't be surprised if this was like a right before the season, like contract extension we hear about in August. So yeah, fact.
I'm going to go fiction. I think this one could linger a little bit. I think Zach Tom could want to be one of the highest paid tackles in football. Maybe Green Bay just said, yep, we're cool with that. I think this one could get a little bit like interesting. So I'm going to say fiction, but I hope both of you are right. And I think there's still a strong chance both of you could be right on this one.
I think that would be more smoke to use your, I think that would be evidence of more smoke. Like if they futz around with Zach Tom, if this was his third contract, then I'd have, you know what I mean? Then I think the conversation's different, but this seems of all of the difficult conversations they're going to have with decisions at loaded positions. To me, this should not be one of them. And I think if they're going to do it, why mess around with it? Why create an issue there when there doesn't need to be one?
Andy, are you hearing rumblings of there being?
Nope. Okay. To be clear. No, I just think this could be one that takes a little bit of time to get the I's dotted and T's crossed. I think it gets done eventually. I'm not super concerned that Zach Tom won't be a Packer in the future. I just think this is one of those ones that could take a little bit. I think the bonus for Green Bay is that Zach Tom, he showed up to all the practices. I think they're going to love him for that. Like he's not holding in or doing anything like that. He's doing the work. He's been the consummate professional. He's been durable. And you can play him at five positions, even if something happens along the way where like, oh, he can't really play right side. All right, move him to center, move him to guard, do whatever you want. Like he's still going to have value no matter what. I think there's a lot of reasons to get it done. I think they will get it done. All right. Last but not least, the Packers will win the Super Bowl this upcoming season, fact or fiction. That's your last job.
Perry.
Statistically speaking,
I'm
a betting woman. It's fiction. I mean, you're asking me, like, based on this past season, like, unless they get better from last season, no.
All right, Perry's muted. Grant, do you think the Packers are going to win the Super Bowl? Or the Packers will win the Super Bowl, fact or fiction?
Fact, Andy. I love doing this podcast with you.
Thank you.
I'll say fiction. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that could happen. I just think in order for it to happen, you have to find like three or four guys on this roster who go from being a good player to a great or a superstar level player, which could happen. There's just plenty of other teams in the league who are already at that spot. So it's going to take a big leap, and it's a leap that I would not bet on. But I tell you what, Andy, I'm excited to cheer for it to happen. God, I can't wait. I'm just so fired up.
If you hadn't muted me, I would have said what Grant said.
Completely unrelated before I get to my answer. I just want to let you guys all know, we do have two openings on the Packaday podcast. If you guys are interested, Andy, you can hit me at packadaypodcast@gmail.com. Clearly it's a fact. I will not hear any other arguments any other way. There's no other way to kind of think about this. Packers winning the Super Bowl this upcoming season, guaranteed. Lock it in, do whatever you need to do. I'm going 100% lead pipe lock Packers winning the Super Bowl this upcoming season. We'll not hear any dissent any other way. And obviously it's going to be very difficult. I know exactly what you guys are saying. But for fun's sake, I'm going fact. I'll just to be different. I'll go fact on this one. right, friends, that's all I got. We got to all 12. I think that was a really fun conversation on a wide variety of topics. And I think, again, getting gut reactions to this stuff, I think is really interesting. And just kind of seeing even the thought process and like the what goes through, you know, what could happen in some of these different scenarios is really, really unique. And that's why I wanted to do it this exact way. And you guys absolutely crushed it. I appreciate you guys a ton. Grant, what do you got coming out? Any final thoughts? Where can we follow all your amazing work? Anywhere you want to go?
Amazing is a reach, but I do work. It's a nightly, Wisconsin sports radio show that you can listen to live. It streams on my Twitter. That's probably the best way to, if you have no clue about me and you want to check it out, just go to my Twitter at Wisco Grant. But the show is the Wisco Sports Show, and it's got a YouTube and a Facebook page and all very easy to find. And nightly live from 4 to 6, the magic of live radio, not just podcasting. So I do love that. That's about it. Reacting to mandatory minicamp this week, I guess a little bit more debriefing, but not a lot of drama. So probably talk a little Brewers and maybe even a little golf this week because the US Open was good. But any Packers news whenever there is news.
Perry?
Packs, what she said is still on maternity leave.
The new podcast that's going to sprout.
Very funny. It sprouted and Maggie is enjoying the fruits of her labor, literally. But right now I'm pack a day only, baby. Which is fun. And Andy, Grant, and I will continue to bring the content until we get our Maggie back.
We missed the Maggie in the Packer sphere, by the way. I miss all my weekly Maggie updates, and I tried still bugging her on maternity leave to be like, hey, come on the radio. And she's like, I had a kid. I'm like, I don't need you getting rusty. I'm like, you need to be on the radio still. Come talk Packers. And I'm like, all right, you can have your time off. I get it. But no, I'm happy she's having her family time for sure. And we'll get her back on here and, on the radio and everything soon enough. And of course, Packs, what she said as well. But Maggie, we miss you a ton. Get back soon. But happy you're enjoying your time off for sure. All right. That's going to do it for all of us. I hope you enjoyed our Fact or Fiction today. Grant, Perry, and I will be back in a couple weeks. Again, you can find him at Wisco Grant. You can find her at Perry_Goldstein. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. And of course, the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.